This is Jim Yunkey on September 5, 2003. I'm at the home of Robert Kreider, 2825 North Main in North Newton, Kansas, and we're going to talk about his autobiography, My Early Years. Robert, as you considered writing an autobiography, did you think of modeling this after biographies or autobiographies that you had read in the past?
In the recent past, the best Mennonite biography is Al Kimes' Harold Bender. I think I've been intrigued by some autobiographies like Russell Baker's Growing Up, or Ellen Goodman had a wonderful autobiography of her early years, lots of baseball in it, and Catholic nuns. And, these are ones that I'm not sure that they shaped my writing of it, but except that I've appreciated biographies that have a substantial amount of detail in them.
Which is certainly one strength of your autobiography.
You might call it thick description.
Right. Right. Well, it's poetic description, poetic detail, I think. Did you place this in the context of Mennonite biography? I mean, did you?
You know, here I think of another biography. It has come out since I wrote this by a friend, and that's von Hardesty's Lindbergh, In This Centennial Year of Aviation. It's a wonderful book, Beautifully illustrated. Well, did I set it in the context of Mennonite biography? No, I think I began writing for my family, and then as I wrote for family, I began to sense that there'd be those looking over my shoulder, particularly the CPS years and the post-war years.
So when you wrote about CPS, for example, you were thinking of readers who had been in CPS with you and how they would respond?
For those who are interested in the CPS experience, I don't have a great expectation of CPS men reading this. I think my generation has stopped reading. So it's for those who might be interested in reading about an experience back there 50, 60 years ago. So I'm not writing, yes, for a few peers, but you know, we're slipping away. It's not a reading public anymore.
How about the chapter on Goshen, and particularly the Goshen difficulties when Goshen was closed for that year, and the stressful times in the Indiana Conference and at Goshen? You must have had in mind how people in that community who have memories of that would read this.
Oh, indeed. And that's the one I suppose I wrote most carefully, with perhaps the most anxiety, because I know that there are out there the conventional interpretations of the events. And the other is, I know the feeling of hurt on the part of many. And so that was a chapter that I checked out with a number of people beforehand who had some awareness of that period, to see whether I was catching the nuances, and or whether I was going too far and some of the candor with which I approached it. I'm still curious about those who defend what had been the interpretation of the closing of Goshen. I haven't heard from them.
Have you heard from others about the book, and what kind of reviews do you get from your readers?
Well, I've received a number of letters and phone calls, and people who take me out for lunch and they want to talk about it, and for those who have some memories of say small town Bluffton or early Bethel or the MCC experience, they find a lot to stimulate their questions. I have had a few criticisms, and these come from just very dear friends. One, a journalist, kind of an agnostic, who says it's so churchy, so much church in it. Or another friend who said, well, who did you write this for? It reads like a source book. He commented that the quotations at the beginning of the chapters were good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not all positive, but I know that in the Bluffton area, that seemed to, so many embraced the book, and I got a phone call from a friend who reported that their men's book club had two sessions talking about it. So I think the details trigger their stories. So often when people respond, they want to tell their story. And that, to me, that is satisfying. It means it's it evokes memories that ought to be probably recorded to go beyond just the oral.
One of the most powerful parts of the book for me was your description of your father and your relationship with your father. I have recently reread James Carroll's autobiography, in which he has a very troubled relationship with his father, who's a two-star general in the Air Force, and during the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement, and it has to do with his choosing to drop out of a vocation as a priest in the church and breaking the hearts of his parents, and sort of a disintegration of the family in the Vietnam era. It's such a contrast to your positive, wonderful, affirming relationship with your father, and which produced much of the raw material for your book. That is, your writing letters to your parents was the basis for much of this.
That's a section I enjoyed particularly doing on my father, and using my mother as a little bit of a contrast. She had a different personality, and it is complementary, I think. The part which I wrestled with, of course, on Dad is that which he was so good, and Mother was so much more human in terms of she had flaws like I have, and that how to find the shadow in Dad's life, which I did then find in terms of the great hurts in his life. And perhaps you recall a section where I set up Dad's family as a dysfunctional family,
right,
in contrast to Mother's family, the Shoemakers, as a much more integrated, functional family. That grabbed me at one point when I was working on it as a useful insight.
Well, it is a great challenge for a literary artist to make goodness interesting, or to make peace interesting.
And it may not, I don't know to what degree my description of Dad is interesting. But the shadow in it might be the hurts, which I could have amplified, but, you know, the book got very long in any event.
But sometimes moments in a book stand out and are memorable and unforgettable, and your description of his returning from that meeting at Goshen and quivering and shaking physically, mm-hmm, is one of the most powerful moments in the book, I think.
And, you know, and that such information comes to me in the years just prior to my mother's death. There are bits of oral history that don't come out, that are not available to one. Say, if I had tried to write this back in 1952, it's available to me now.
How, if you had written this book in 1952, at the point where this volume ends, how would it have been different at that time?
Well, first of all, I would not have written it. I mean, I was just 32 years old, 33, and it'd be an ego trip to write a book at that age. It would be imprudent. Who'd want to be interested?
Yeah.
And but now, give another a half century, I see that indeed I did have some experiences that still are only meagerly reported in CPS and the MCC experience. And if I have this corpus of memory and material, I have an obligation, and I like to write, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not have done it. But given the passage of time, I can write with some candor. I think, in comparison to some biographical writing in the Mennonite world, there's more candor in this than in most. But I have the benefit of their people are dead, and you can write then. The earlier part, you know, this book is really a collection of books. There's the story of the family that leads up to my parents, the first 100 or more pages. That story of the coming of my ancestors to America before the American Revolution, much of that material was not readily available 50 years ago. But there have been so many good family histories and regional histories. The John Ruth books on Lancaster and on Franconia have helped me. If my parents read this book, They would just be delighted to see how much I have there that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, see, there's a. There are also questions that I can ask now that I would not have been able to ask back then,
mm.
Or. My interest in such things as parenting. Another would be the sense of place.
Mm.
I seek to develop that at Sterling, Goshen, Bluffton, and so on, sense of place. If back there, if I'd worked on it, I would have had some sources available that I don't have now. For example, in the CPS years, some of my closest friends, like Esko Lohan and Bill Snyder and Elmer Ediger and others, I would have sent chapters and say, how does it look? Is this authentic? Am I catching it? What counsel do you have? I would have done that. I don't have that. Yeah, my peers are dying off, and you know I'm a survivor. Well, those are some of the things in my mind, that candor and categories of analysis.
You do have a coda or an epilogue in which you quickly go over what happened in the years since, but do you have a plan to write another volume?
Well, the ones who place pressure on me on this are my children. Our first child, Esther, appears in the scene, or our second child. We lost the first. And they say they're interested in the story where they're in the picture. And so I have some obligation, yes, to continue, and I've already done some work on that latter section, and I've done a lot more writing. But the problem is how to organize it. Here I've used 600 pages to do the first 30 some years of my life, and I've lived now for 50 more years, and I would like to, the second volume, I like to keep within the compass of, say, 300 pages. And I would be deliberately pace myself to do that. And that presents a problem of how do you handle detail? You move toward a more generic, and then to me that's dull. And I'd like to have a certain crispness of detail.
Well, we're looking forward to the to reading it when it comes out. Do you have any counsel for other folks who might be writing biographies?
Well, I've just finished writing a review for the MQR on the book that you have a chapter in, on Erwin Waldner. I would like to see a biography of Erwin Waldner. You're one of, we've written some five chapters, there are five chapters there, 40 or so pages, and Erwin, who played a monumentally significant role in the 20th century and among our Mennonite people. And that deserves a biography.
There one would be writing about a good man, mm-hmm. And the challenges of writing about saintly people, I guess.
Yeah, it's easier to write a biography about Harold Bender than about Erwin Waldner. But it seems to me that it might be written in the context of other Mennonite leadership of the time, to play him off and get some contrast. You know, you'd throw in Edgy Kaufman and others, and Harold Bender. You'd let him enter in, and I keep wanting to write the biography of Lois and her family in the context of her fascinating family of George Lambert, who wrote two books and made trips around the world, and her mother and her aunt, who were in Armenia before the war. And But my children say, tell me, hey, look, you lay off of mother's story. You must get your story written, and then comes mother's story. Or they want to work on it, which would be wonderful.
Well, we pray for fullness, richness of life, and ongoing energy and vitality so that you can write that book and more. Thank you very much.